listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio. It's time for
Dreaded Sports Talk.
Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
Hello, everyone. This is Ken from Jersey. Flying solo tonight. Alan's out of town, and even Rob's also out of town. So it's just going to be me for an hour or so. I'm going to talk a little sports. Got a football game I hear on Sunday, the Super Bowl. We'll get right into that. We'll analyze that game. We'll look at both teams, try and break it down a little bit. Maybe we can get into a little bit of baseball, maybe even a little bit of hockey. First, the thing I thought was funny today, we got the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, you know, biggest game, biggest sporting event in the United States, and the headline of the Indianapolis papers was about Peyton Manning. He came out with a statement today saying that he's ready to play and he expects to play next season. It's just that the Colts haven't divulged their plans yet, if he's in their plans, or if they're going to not pick up that $28 million option, let him go and sign Andrew Luck and kind of start over again with a franchise quarterback. That's yet to be seen. My personal opinion is, even though the Colts say they haven't made a decision, I think they have. They can save $28 million to pay Luck, and also the quarterback isn't the only spot that needed help. They needed help in the secondary, on the whole defensive side of the ball, except for the two defensive ends. The wide receivers are getting old. They can use that $28 million in a lot better ways than putting into a quarterback who's head into his mid to upper 30s, serious neck injury. You don't know what you're going to get out of him, and once you sign him, you're on the hook for that $28 million. Now, as far as the Super Bowl, the key for me is the Giants being able to stop the twin tight ends of the Patriots. And as of today, Gronkowski shed the walking boot, the protective boot, but he's still listed day-to-day, high ankle sprain. Usually high ankle sprains take a few weeks to recover from. It took Adrian Peterson 3 weeks earlier in the year to get back on the field, and it took him another week to 2 weeks after that to get back in top Adrian Peterson, you know, game form. This may be a big blow for the Patriots, a break for the Giants, because then you can keep an eye on Hernandez and Wes Welker and maybe keep the Patriots in check. Also, the other thing is the Patriots offensive line is probably average at best. Brady was sacked 32 times this season, and in the games where they didn't play well, it was because he was harassed and chased back in the pocket. He's not a very efficient quarterback when he's under pressure and when he's running. So the key for the Giants is now that they're healthy on the defensive line for Umanura, Tuck, they need to put the pressure on him, keep him moving, hit him early. When he gets hit early, his passes are not nearly as accurate as when he has all day to sit back there and throw. And that's the strength of the Giant defense, is that pass rush. They didn't rank very well overall in the season defensively, but you kind of have to throw those numbers out a little bit because pretty much all season long they weren't healthy. They were, on the offensive side of the ball, they were fifth in the league in passing, 32nd in rushing. Now, they didn't have Ahmad Bradshaw for a good part of the season, and that could be a problem because they're other than the Atlanta game, they really haven't had a stellar game on the ground in the playoffs. Patriots, on the other hand, are second in passing, and they're 20th in rushing. They don't have a potent rush attack either, so it's going to come down to the passing game, and the path to defense is also ranked near the bottom of the league, 31st in the league against the pass, 17th against the rush. So if you go by these numbers, you're looking at a high-scoring, pass-happy game. But again, those numbers have to be looked at with a grain of salt because the Giants didn't have Umanura Tuck for a good part of that season, and the secondary wasn't healthy, and it's probably the healthiest it's been since training camp. If you remember, the Giants lost three starters in the first 2 weeks of training camp, and they've had to fill in and kind of piecemeal the secondary together. And it's starting to come around. It started to gel with the Jet game, which in essence was their first playoff game. They had to win that, and they had to win the next week. And they've been on the roll since then, and not coincidentally, that's when the injured players started to become healthy and return to the lineup. It's the dark horse for me. I think if Gronkowski doesn't play, the Giants will get enough rush on Brady to keep him, I can't say in check, because you never keep Tom Brady in check, keep him under control. The dark horse to me is Deion Branch. He's a veteran receiver who has had some bright moments this year, had some dud moments too. It's just basically because they have so many guys to throw to, sometimes he's the odd man out. The Giants pay too much attention to Welker, Gronkowski, and Hernandez. This is a player that can get open. He's probably their only legitimate deep threat with speed. You have three possession receivers with Gronkowski, Hernandez, and Welker. None of those three really have the speed to, you know, take you deep downfield where Branch does. I guess to a degree Ocho Cinco does too, but Ocho Cinco doesn't get on the field. He's too busy on the sideline with his Twitter account, you know, updating what he's doing on the bench. The Pats on the offensive side of the ball, as far as the ground game, kind of, I can't say running back by committee. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis is their guy. He doesn't get a lot of touches during the game. They bring in Ridley and Kevin Falk on third down. It's basically stop the pass and you can stop the Patriots. The Giants need to get some sort of ground game going. And it's been very inconsistent. It's either been all or nothing. And most of the season it's been nothing. Time for Brandon Jacobs to, you know, step up and play like the back that he is. For such a big guy, he seems to be hurt a lot. He's finally healthy. Bradshaw's finally healthy. I don't think the Giants have anything major. Jake Ballard, the tight end, has been a little bit nicked up, but you know he's going to play. It's just go out and execute the game plan and attack a Patriot defense that also isn't very good. The defensive line is okay, but when you get to the linebackers and the secondary is very, very weak, as you know the 31st in the league in pass defense points out. They have a lot of rookies, a lot of injured players who didn't come back. So it's up to Belichick to come up with some kind of scheme to, you know, stop Eli Manning, slow him down. Giant passing attack has been on fire, mainly led by a guy who very few people thought would even be a factor on the team going back to July and August in training camp, in Victor Cruz. This man's been on fire. 10 catches over 145 yards in the first half alone last week. You throw in Hakeem Nicks, Manningham, and some big unexpected catches from Jake Ballard. People thought when Kevin Boss was not re-signed and let go to sign with the Raiders that the Giants were, you know, a little bit crazy here because you don't have a tight end who can catch. These guys are supposed to be blockers, but Ballard's really, really come up with some clutch catches, and hopefully he'll be healthy, and that will solidify the Giant passing game. It'll give them another option to go to. My prediction is going to be a close game, a high-scoring game. I think the Giants will pull this game out, less than a touchdown. It's not going to be a lopsided score. I think Eli Manning is sharp right now. He's playing probably the best he's played all season. The receivers are all sharp. They're on a roll. I mean, since that Jet game, they've kind of just all come together healthy, and they're pretty much unstoppable. The teams they beat, the Packers were one of your highest-scoring teams in the league. They held them in check, and Manning picked them apart. They got enough running from Bradshaw and Jacobs to keep the Packers honest, and Eli and the receiving corps did the rest. Then you had the Atlanta game where, you know, Atlanta's not Green Bay, but a good team with a lot of firepower. Matt Ryan is a pretty good quarterback, has some good numbers, had a stable of good receivers, and the Giants put the squash on them and held them in check. So it's going to be an interesting game. I personally don't like the 2 weeks in between. It's good for the hype. It's good for the buildup of the game. But you can do that in a week. You don't need 2 weeks to promote this thing. It's got enough promotion already. It probably should be a holiday in this country. It's that big, on the world stage. You got the World Cup, is probably the largest worldwide soccer sporting event. But as far as the United States, it's I know the World Series is a big thing, but the Super Bowl is, I guess because it's a 1 day event too. You get your Super Bowl parties, and it's the biggest event in this country. We're gonna take a quick break, and because this station in this show is kind of like trap rock oriented, and we have we've had a lot of the trap rock artists on as special guest pickers, and they pick the pros, and we're going to take a little break because I need to get some things together here, and we're going to listen to a little bit of John Friday from his second CD, Tropicalize. This is the title cut, Tropicalize.
I'm sitting here drinking a beer in a tiki bar. Really don't think I'm gonna get too far today. The sun is dancing all across the bay right now, and I ain't getting off this bar stool before. before the sun goes down. It took a while to get here, but not long for me to know. I'm gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gotta take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. There's a lady in the corner sitting all alone, and the band's playing music that is sweet and slow. I'm gonna buy her a drink, I'm gonna ask her to dance. I'm feeling too good not to take this chance. It took a while to get here, but not long for me to know. I'm gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gonna take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. I think it's time to be a beach bum. I think it's time to have some fun. Just pour yourself a cup of spiced rum and hang out in that tropic sun. Just listen while those steel drums play. It's a barefoot party every day. Then I toast the sunset with my island girl. I'm never going back to the real world. It takes a while to get here, but not long before you know. You're gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as you can go. You gotta take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. When you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized.
Back. That was John Friday and Tropicalized. A couple of quick football notes. I have to admit, I didn't watch almost none of the Pro Bowl on Sunday because I'm just not a big all-star guy, you know, type guy. The game was useless. And according to Aaron Rodgers, he was embarrassed by the NFC effort in the Pro Bowl. He said guys weren't playing hard, guys weren't trying. It's just no motivation, no energy. They kind of just went out and went through the motions. This is what the All-Star Game is. Nobody cares about it. First of all, you don't have players from the two best teams during the season around to participate in it because they have to get ready for the Super Bowl, and they're obviously not going to play in an exhibition game. You have pretty much all the veterans that have been there before and just don't care to waste another week. They want to start their off season instead of going to Hawaii. They back out with mystery illnesses, and you have injuries, and you have rookies and the secondary players, you know, coming in to play these games. That's just what it is. There's no relevance to the game. There never will be. It's just an exhibition game. You got to just take it for what it is. It's kind of like the NHL All-Star Game, too, which I didn't watch this weekend. It was 12-4. Nobody plays defense. Nobody checks. There's no urgency. It's an exhibition game. And the difference with this game is it's in the middle of the season, so you don't want to get hurt. You're just trying to go through the motions, skate a little bit, make a few nice plays, and get out of there. The only All-Star game that has any meaning, and I will watch, is Major League Baseball's All-Star game, because the winner, winning league, has the extra, the home field advantage, the extra game if needed, during the World Series. And that means something. The rest of these games are just like playground games. So Aaron Rodgers, if you're going to go to next year's Pro Bowl, just be prepared for the same thing, because it's never going to change. This is just the way it is. The highlight of the All-Star game for me, and I don't know if they did it this year, it's like I said, I didn't watch it, was Dr. Pepper would have a fan who was picked out of a contest at random come on the field and try and kick field goals for cars. That to me, that was the most exciting part of the All-Star game. Another football note here, potential free agent Matt Forte from the Bears, who I know a lot of people were probably licking their chops thinking, I'd like to get a shot at signing this guy. According to the Bears, the general manager Phil Emery says that he anticipates working out the issues they have with him, and they'll never even see free agency because, quite frankly, without him, the Bears will be doomed unless they sign someone else. This is a good young player. He was the offense last year, even before all the injuries to the quarterbacks. With Cutler being out, it definitely hurt, but this was the main guy here. This guy did everything. He caught passes. He ran multiple 100-yard games. This is somebody that they definitely need to have back in the fold and get him on the field and sign him for as long as they possibly can, because this is a key player to their future. Tim Tebow has been named the starting quarterback going into training camp. Now, they're saying he needs to make some improvements and they're going to work with him, but he basically the job is his to lose. And if he plays like he did during some of these playoffs games, he's going to lose it pretty quick. Nothing against the man. I'm not against his religion or anything he does on the field, but this guy just got so overhyped. This is a guy that had one decent passing game. He had a couple games where he threw for 60 yards, 80 yards. You can't win in the NFL. In a playoff game where against tough competition, I know he had that streak where they won them games. Most of those wins, if not all those wins, were against sub-500 non-playoff teams. And even the game against the Bears, if Marion Barber falls down inbounds on that running play, runs the clock out, we're not even talking about Tim Tebow in the playoffs because the Broncos wouldn't even be in the playoffs. Now, unless this guy improves dramatically over the next year or two, I don't see him being the answer to the quarterback position in Denver. I don't think Kyle Orton was either. I think it's just time to maybe look towards the draft this year. So the quarterback-heavy draft this year, you can... if you don't act now, you may miss your opportunity. I would personally try and turn this guy into a running back or an H-back or something, because he's got some running skills. He's just not a very accurate thrower. So I don't know what they're going to do, but we'll find out. Draft time will be here in April and see what they have on their mind. That's pretty much it for the... any football news here? Possibly here that the rumor going around that London could be in the mix for the Super Bowl. If they do that, I just can't watch football from London. I tried to watch a couple of these regular season games they scheduled from there, and it's just there's no energy in the stadium. They people chant like it's a soccer game, but they don't know what they're chanting for. It's just not something I want to see. Keep this game in this country. It's American football. I'm sure the teams wouldn't want that either, the travel, the time change. That just would just totally disrupt everything that is your routine from that first preseason game in August. You know, your furthest trip could be from, you know, maybe New York to Seattle. You don't want to be going across the ocean and dealing with time changes. And you would see probably a game filled with a lot of errors, a lot of mistakes, a lot of stuff not worthy of a Super Bowl. We'll talk about this, the results of the game. We'll go over it a lot more next week after it's over on Dreaded Sports. We're talking about All-Star games. The NHL All-Star game this past Sunday also. And like I said, I didn't watch that either. Actually, I didn't even know when it was on. I actually tuned in at night thinking it was on at night. I figured I'll catch a little bit of it. And I couldn't find it. I checked the internet and saw the final score of the game started at 4 o'clock. Not a lot of good promotion, not a lot of good hype for this game. The NHL has got to get on the mainstream network. This was on the NBC, like, Versus Network. And not a lot of people know where to find that. If you want to be a major sports league in this country, they need to get on a big network and start promoting this game the way it should be. There's a lot of good players, a lot of good hockey out there, and not everybody's getting the chance to see it. I will mention that Marian Gabrick from my team, from the New York Rangers, was the MVP of the All-Star game with 3 goals and an assist. And a thing I thought was kind of interesting, how they picked the teams. He actually scored all his goals and all his points against his teammate, Henrik Lundqvist. The draft, it was a fantasy draft style setup. It wasn't like the East against the West. They had 2 players, Zdeno Chara from the Bruins and Daniel Alfredsson from Ottawa. Now, I actually don't know how they chose them 2 players to do this, but they were the captains. The guys were all kind of lined up, and they called it the fantasy draft. They drafted like it was a fantasy hockey league, and that's how they came up with the teams. That's a kind of a novel idea. I don't have any problem with that. It kind of, again, it's a fun game. It's an exhibition game. Guys just are trying not to get hurt, so it gives a little bit of excitement. You know, you got teammates playing against each other. It's kind of a fun thing. But again, 12-4, nobody plays defense. It's like watching a pond hockey game. I could do without that. We're going to take another quick break in keeping with the Trop Rock music theme tonight. We're going to play a song by a good friend of mine, Mr. Jimmy Pappas. It's called Island Style. This is from his latest CD, Hello, Mr. Sunshine. This is Island Style.
We go grandma's house on Sunday and they're cleaning the yard.
That was Jimmy Pappas with Island Style. Back to sports. I'm going to give a quick rundown of the NHL. We tend not to do a lot of NHL coverage here in the first half of the year because we got the NFL, and early in the fall we have Major League Baseball playoffs and World Series. But now it's getting down to the time where we're going to start watching the NHL. As far as surprises, I guess my team leading the Eastern Conference right now, I got to say I'm a little bit surprised, is the Rangers with 66 points, and that's going to be at least 67 because they're in an overtime battle with the Devils right now. Unfortunately, they gave up a goal with 40 seconds left, let the Devils tie it. They're in a very tough division. The Flyers are right up there, the Penguins and the Devils. The only team that's not in playoff contention right now are the Islanders. They have last year's Stanley Cup champion Bruins in their division. Probably a big surprise to me is the Ottawa Senators went from being just a poor, non-playoff team last year, and they're in second place, only 4 points behind the Bruins, currently sixth overall in the Eastern Conference and in a playoff spot right now, which I wouldn't have predicted that back in September, October. On the downside in that division, you got Montreal and Buffalo, who I thought would be better, and they're taking up the rear in that division. Buffalo is last in the they're 2 points behind the Canadiens, both with sub 500 records. You got Ovechkin and his Washington Capitals leading the division. It's a winning record, it's a 500 over 500 record, but it's not. They're not playing at the same pace and the same intensity as they were last year. They've already gone through a coach. It's a relatively weak division, so they'll probably win the division. Florida Panthers are actually tied with them right now, but I don't see Florida hanging on. And the big disappointment in that division is the Tampa Bay Lightning. I thought they would be a whole lot better. They're playing the two games below 500, and they don't have the goaltending. They can score goals. Le Cavalier is and Stamkos in St. Louis. They have the offense. The netminder is not very good. And Carolina's taken up the rear in that division, which I kind of figured. They have ex-Devil captain Kirk Muller is their coach, and he hasn't turned them around a whole lot. He took over about 2 months ago, I guess it was now. In the Western Conference, you got the Red Wings, as usual, leading the division. Well, the surprise to me is the St. Louis Blues, who fired their coach. They are playing really poorly early in the season. They're second in that division, 29-13-7, 2 points behind the Red Wings. And they're doing it with a lot of young, non-established stars. They got a lot of young players on the rise, playing a good brand of team hockey. Defense is playing well. The goaltending's playing well, and takes them to second place. You have Nashville and Chicago, 1 point each behind them with 64 points. Columbus is way back and playing for next year, playing for the draft pick right now at 13-30. In the Northwest, you get the Canucks and the Minnesota Wild, another surprising team, in second place. But they're 11 points behind the Canucks, so it looks like they're actually in the eighth and final playoff spot right now, 1 point ahead of the Colorado Avalanche and 3 points ahead of Dallas, who is one of my disappointing teams. I thought they would be a whole lot better, but they're having I can't say it's an off season. They're 4 games over 500, but this is a team that's usually way over 500, and they're going to struggle to probably get a playoff spot. The LA Kings are second behind San Jose in the Pacific. San Jose has got a 2-point lead over the Kings, and then it spreads out a little bit between Dallas, Phoenix, and the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. If the playoffs ended today, you'd have Detroit, Vancouver, San Jose, St. Louis, Nashville, Chicago, the LA Kings, and the Minnesota Wild from the Western Conference. And East, you'd have the Rangers, Bruins, Washington Capitals, the Flyers, the Sidney Crosby-less Pittsburgh Penguins, Ottawa, Florida, and the Devils are currently tied. Actually, it's a three-way tie for the last playoff spot. You got three teams at 55 points. The Leafs, the Panthers, and the Devils. Then you got Winnipeg 5 points out. It's the time of year where you get that hockey push. Teams are starting to jockey for position. A trade deadline will be coming up. And, you know, it seems like with the NHL, more than any other sport, once you get into the playoffs, into the tournament, you have just as good a chance of winning as anybody. For a long time now, the team that's the President's Cup winner with the most points doesn't always win the Stanley Cup. It seems to always be a surprise team. What it takes is a hot goaltender. You can have the eighth-seeded team. Your goaltender gets hot in the playoffs. He can carry you all the way through. And last time I saw a big dramatic change like that was the Devils and the Anaheim Ducks. John Sebastian Giguere was the goalkeeper, and he just was on fire. The Ducks were the seventh-seeded team, swept through the first three rounds of the playoffs. I think, if I remember correctly, they lost one game in those three series. The problem was they swept through those series so quick they got to the finals. They had to wait 8 days before the Devils finished winning the Eastern Conference. And it seems like over those 8 days of non-activity, the magic, the mojo was all gone. And, you know, what it came down to was the Devils were playing the old seventh-seeded team, and they won that series, you know, pretty handily. Touch on baseball a little bit. We spoke last week about Prince Fielder and his signing with the Tigers. It needed a little bit of good news because it looks like Victor Martinez is definitely out for the season. He just had microfracture surgery today on the knee, and he's going to need the second surgery coming up in like 6 to 8 weeks. So he's pretty much done for the year. And that was, you know, he was their DH / catcher. So that's a big blow to the Tigers, but I guess they'll, you know, the signing of Fielder kind of makes up for that because Fielder is a more productive player than he is. But it would have been nice to have him there too because now they have to rely on Alex Avila, who had a good year, an all-star year last year, but that was the first time he had ever played like that in his life. You got to call him a question mark because you want to see the player do it again. You know, you see a lot of flash in the pans. A lot of people have a good rookie season or they have that breakthrough season, and then you never hear from them again. And looking at the Tiger roster, they've got a few players that fall under that category, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. And also, if Miguel Cabrera is going to accept the move to third base. You know, sometimes you get these big price stars. They're the big guy in town, and now all of a sudden somebody else comes in who's making more money than you, and you have to move off of your position. It doesn't always go over well. And he's not I'm going to be honest, he's a poor fielding third baseman. He's going to be a liability in the field, but I guess when you're driving 144 runs, you can kind of overlook a few errors. You just don't want to make in those errors in the, you know, playoff or a World Series game if you get that far. So it'll be an interesting situation to see if he's going to go with the flow and see if he's going to accept the switch and not gripe about it. Now he says he's all good with it and it's not a problem, but that's what he's got to say now. He can't, you know, you don't want to rock the boat now before spring training even starts. So we'll see what happens there. There's still a few few pitchers out there that haven't been signed yet. Roy Oswalt looks like he's going to go either to the Cardinals or the Texas Rangers. They seem to be the teams he wants to go to anyway. So he mentioned he wants to play with them guys. So one of them will end up getting him. And this, a move by the Houston Astros. They've actually signed former World Series MVP Leivan Hernandez. I have to look into this guy's numbers. He's got to be about 45 by now. This guy's been, he's one of those defectors that nobody knows his true age. And he was an older player when he got here. And he's been playing in the major leagues for a while now, and he's still hanging in there. Most baseball training camps will be starting up close to 3 weeks. I know my team, the Twins, starts up on the 17th, Yankees on the 18th. Most teams seem to start between the 15th and the 19th. Then you get the exhibition games starting up that first week of March, which is always a sign that spring is and summer is on the way. No other big signings this week. Most of the big name players are gone. You know, Pujols to the Angels, which, in my opinion, the deal he got for the years he got, the money he got, it's. I don't know if that was a good move by the Angels or not. Here's a guy who's had declining statistics the last 3 years. It's not to say he's a horrible player. He's still, you know, one of the best, but his numbers are going down. And by the time he hits the 10th year of that contract, he's going to be 42 years old, making $30 million. Now, I don't know how you figure that into a budget. If his production's been slightly dropping each of the last 3 years, by the time he's 42, that's not a lot of value for your money. And they structured the contract that way so they could have the extra money to sign C.J. Wilson, who, again, they gave him a lot of money, and a lot of people don't view him as a rock-solid number one star. Well, he won't be anyway over there with Weaver there, but he had some shaky moments. I don't know if he's worth the money that they gave him. His numbers are pretty good. He doesn't blow you away with the heat. He's a guy that can be hit, and he's a guy that can be hit who's making an awful lot of money, so we'll have to see what happens there. You know, some of these big stars, when they change teams and change leagues and get that money, they lose some of that motivation. Well, the Angels should be a contender in the West, so that doesn't motivate you to be a contender and have a chance to play in the World Series, and nothing's going to. He can just go sit back on his wallet and watch the games if he wants to. Surprisingly, the Yankees made a move that kind of baffles me. Now, as people who follow the baseball chat on Facebook know, I'm like the Yankees antichrist. I just don't like the Yankees any way you serve them up to me. They had this a prospect, a catcher who came up, played a lot this year towards the end of the season, Jesus Montero, who put up some pretty good numbers for a rookie. He was their prized package prospect that they said they'd never trade. And all of a sudden they trade him to Seattle for Michael Pineda, who is a young kid, 22, who was 9-10 last year, throws hard, walks a lot of guys, has all the potential in the world. But the way the Yankees spoke about Montero, it doesn't seem like he's got enough potential that they should have traded Montero for him. I know they were trying to get Felix Hernandez, but there was no way Seattle was going to trade Hernandez. He's still young. His deal runs to 2016, and he's not making a lot of money, so there's no reason to ship him out. If I were the Yankees, you had Gio Gonzalez over in Oakland, who's already got two winning seasons under his belt. You could have threw a package together similar to what the Washington Nationals did, and they could have got an established left-hander that they could just put right in it, and you kind of know what you have, not what you might possibly have. So I'm hoping he doesn't work out being the Yankee hater that I am, but like I said, the guy does have potential, and he's a hard thrower. He throws mid to upper 90s. So I guess anytime you get a young 22-year-old kid who can throw that hard, then you take a chance on him. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to finish up. We're going to keep along with the trap rock theme here. This is a buddy of mine from New Jersey. His name is Gary Phillips, and this is The Life of a Beach Bum by Gary Phillips.
Gonna hang out at the Jersey Shore, where there are pretty girls galore, soaking up the warm summer sun. Maybe move to the West Coast, where Cali girls are really the most, living the life of a beach bum. With an ice cold beer in my hand, not really having a plan. Ocean breeze blowing through my hair, watch the sun rise over the ocean and set at Mallory Square. I live in the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take a life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio, singing and a banging on my drum. Laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. I gotta stop this hectic pace, ain't gonna win the race. Have to start to walk and not run. Take life easy for a while, no more frowns, I just got to smile. I live in the life of a beach bum. Listen to some trop rock sounds with this new freedom I found. A surfing and sailing, having lots of fun. Don't wanna be a star, I just wanna sing and play my guitar. I live in the life of a beach bum. Just wanna take life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio, singing and a banging on my drum. Laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. Living life without a care, it's always 5 o'clock somewhere. A shot of tequila and some rum. Listen to the sound of the waves, ain't gonna be anybody's slave. I live in the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take life real slow, listen to beachfront radio, a singing and a banging on my drum. Laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio. radio, a singing and a banging on my drum. Laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. Living the life of a beach bum. Living the life of a beach bum.
And that's Gary Phillips, Living the Life of a Beach Bum. He's a fellow Jersey, he's a Jersey Shore guy, Jersey Shore musician, singer-songwriter. Very talented. Couple quick sports notes, assorted things going on just to finish up for tonight. I see here that the Syracuse basketball, the child molestation case, just gets more bizarre by the day. Now there's court documents that state that the coach Fine's wife was sleeping with some of the Syracuse players. Court papers obtained by the New York Daily News, Bobby Davis, this is the man who was first accused Bernie Fine of sexually molesting him. He says that Fine's wife, Lori, was intimate with many Syracuse basketball players. So now you got ball boys saying that Bernie Fine was molesting them. And now you got the victims, alleged victims, saying that the coach's wife is sleeping with the players. This just gets crazier and crazier as it goes on. And I don't know if we'll ever really find out what happened, because I think the statute of limitations ran out on this. This all came out after the Sandusky Penn State mess. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's starting to turn into a little bit of a soap opera here, so we'll have to stay tuned. Another thing that I've seen come out was, again, Brandon Jacobs should be focusing on the Patriots. Instead, he's telling reporters that Plaxico Burress didn't want to sign. He had no intention of ever signing with the Jets, but because his options were limited, he signed with the Jets, even though he still, to this day, would like to come play and be a New York Giant. That's just what the Jets need at this point of their football lives. And it seems like the whole stature of the team is just, the stability is just crumbling down around. You got Santonio Holmes and Sanchez fighting. You got LaDainian Tomlinson, who's on his way out, backing up with the rookie McElroy, the rookie quarterback from Alabama, who's the injured reserve all season, came out on an Alabama station and said that it was one of the worst clubhouses he's ever seen in his entire life, with the infighting and the, you know, who likes who and who doesn't like who. It's, in my opinion, Holmes has to go. I always say when Santonio Holmes is obtained by the Jets, for a fifth-round draft pick, it seemed a little bit suspicious, a little bit funny. If this man was so good, why did Pittsburgh, who's a very smart organization, doesn't give players away, why would they give him up for a fifth-round pick? Why? Because he was a cancer in the clubhouse. He wore out his welcome there, despite his talent, and it just wasn't working, and they had to get rid of him before he took the team down. So, you know, Rex Ryan takes him in. And I guess I'd never heard any of this surface until this year. I guess the first two years maybe he was okay because they were winning. But the first time a negative situation arises, and look what happens. He's, I heard it's extremely nasty between him and Sanchez. And it's not the type of thing that's, you know, you're going to shake hands, go out and have a beer, and it's going to be forgotten about. The reports from some of the players, and including LaDainian Tomlinson, state that it's a pretty hated. They pretty much hate each other, to put it in simple terms, and it's not going to be repaired anytime quick. So that'll be something to look forward to around draft time, see if the Jets can move him for anybody. They're not going to get a lot for him, considering the off-the-field baggage he's bringing with him. But some of these players just focus on the game. Brandon Jacobs is in the Super Bowl. Don't worry about who wants to play. Maybe if you don't pick up the pace and start playing like you're supposed to, he may take your roster spot next year. So, you know, just get off the Twitter and off the other crap and focus on the Patriots. You got that game coming up in almost 5 days. So let's forget about Plaxico Burress for now. This is about going to wrap it up. This got two little plugs I want to throw out there for two Trop Rock events. The first one is the last weekend of April, at the 26th to the 29th. It's Spring Fling, and you can go to their website and you can check out information on it at www.springfling. That's PHLING, springfling.com. And the other one is one of the top Trop Rock events you'll get this year. It's over July 4th weekend down in Cape Coral, Florida. It's called Red, White, and Tunes. You can go to that website, www.redwhiteandtunes.com. Check out the lineup. It was just posted. Will Kimbrough, a good friend John Friday, Jim Morris, Jimmy Pappas, Calypso Nuts. It's a long, long list. There's too many to name right here. But check out the website, and you can maybe look into that. That's about going to do it for tonight's show. I think Captain Frankendred will be back next week, and I think Evil Rob should as well. So this is Ken from Jersey, and we're going to maybe we'll go out with one more song here. Let's try to find some more John Friday here. This is only the second time I've worked the board here, so I'm a little bit slow at it. Okay, we're gonna play another Jimmy Pappas song since I found that. Oh, here we go. Okay, John, we're gonna go with John Friday. This is Little Rita. Little Rita's Going Wild Tonight. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Well, she packed her bags, bought herself a ticket to Miami. Puddle jumper down to the island, someplace out of reach. Her cell phone's in her bag, right next to her PDA. But the bag. Just